as well as construction. For more information, call 395-0842.
Good evening, everyone. This is Jay DeMay, and you are listening to KHENLP 106.9 Salida. And this is The People's Voice, and this is Jay DeMay. And in the studio, we have Melody Hallett and our guests, Susan Bristol and Jerry Mallett, who are one is running for re-election and one is running to be elected as county commissioners in this county. And we'd like to say welcome to everyone. It is 9 p.m.
Thanks,
welcome.
Thank you.
Let's begin. Tell us about yourselves. Jerry, you want to go first? Most everybody, I think, knows you, but...
Sure. Born in Pueblo a number of years ago, 1939. Grew up in Colorado Springs, moved into Denver. Been coming down to the valley skiing since 1951 on Monarch when it was more basic. Professional environmentalist the rest of most of my life. I did international consulting to countries on how to develop, manage their nature-based tourism. Moved in here 8 years ago. Got involved in a number of projects, steam plant for one, the river parks, and ended up running for county commissioner 4 years ago and was elected.
Very good. Aunt Susan?
Is that going to be? Okay. I moved here 37 years ago when my husband Harold and I got married. He'd lived here previously, and then I moved here. And we ranched out at Nathrop for a number of years. Was concerned about the schools, so ran for and got elected to two terms on the Buena Vista School Board. Then we started Bristol Excavating, had our own company, moved into town from the ranch, and at that point I ran for town council, got elected to that for two terms. Also, at the end of the second term, our town manager quit, and I was, drafted, shall we say, to be the interim town administrator for 6 months until we hired another person. I've been integrally involved in this county and this community for many, many years, getting several different programs started, got Build a Generation started in Buena Vista and was chairman of the board for that for many years and then took over as coordinator for the last 7 years. Also been involved in getting Chaffee County Mentoring started. That was a wonderful and is a wonderful program for children in this community. Currently the big project I've been working on is Chaffee People's Clinic. And for people that may not be aware of that, it's a clinic for people that are uninsured primarily, and it's a sliding scale for fees. And we have found that there's a huge need in this county mm-hmm. for medical assistance for people that have no insurance, and we've had a lot of folks. In fact, we're going to have ribbon cutting at our new clinic in Salida tomorrow, 334 Grand Avenue. So finally got moved into that. We've been sharing offices with public health, and that mm-hmm. it's work, but it's a bit cozy. So, that kind of brings us up to the present, I guess.
Okay. What made you decide to run for county commissioner?
Well, I've been very involved in this community. I've had many projects, written many grants, brought in money, brought in jobs, and been involved, as I said, in school board and town council. And I'm just a person that works hard and likes to give back to the community, and I figured that that would be a good place to keep moving on. And I have particular skills in finance and management areas, and I think that's something that's needed on our county commissioner board. Not that they don't currently have it, but ongoing, you always need people that have that kind of a background. The current commissioners have done a very good job with their revenues. This county is in great shape financially, which when you look at the current economy in this country, I think it's a good thing we have several months of reserves, because who knows what's going to happen. I'm pretty positive that this community will survive.
Okay. Jerry, Susan mentioned revenues.
Right.
Can you tell me where some of the revenues come from in this county?
Well, a lot of them come from property tax and, of course, sales tax. That brings in about $11 million a year. We get a good chunk of dollars coming down from the Fed for public health. That's about a $3 million grant every year. Social services come in through the state. We get a lot of good support there. Our highways, our county roads, our highway user tax funds, That's a challenge anymore because those fees are dropping. Those funds and those taxes are dropping. So at some point in time, with the cost of fuels and mechanical equipment going up, we're going to have some real challenges with the road department in the county here.
Mm-hmm. I know that some of the roads, I guess, are in need of repair and some reworking and things, too.
Sure.
I know that certainly the city of Salida has issues with their roads as well, some pretty serious issues. Speaking of roads, how do the roads in the city of Salida tie in with the county, or do they at all?
They don't. They're managed by the city. Same with Buena Vista and Poncha. They take care of their own roads. We hit the county roads. We do some maintenance on some of the Forest Service roads, and then of course CDOT hits some of the main drags coming through 50, 285, 291. Those are managed by the CDOT. So we've got four or five agencies trying to keep us moving in transportation.
Why are the funds going down?
People are spending, buying less gas. So the tax fees are, unfortunately, they're dropping. And we see that is going to, another 4 or 5 years, will be a real critical issue. We're not driving as much, and we haven't raised those fees to go along. The price of gas goes up, but the taxes on each gallon haven't raised at all. So it's gonna be a serious issue probably in 3 or 4 years.
Well, and I think, too, one of the things that's really affecting the roads is the price of asphalt. It just went up horrendously this last year. And so I know in the town of Buena Vista particularly, there were several projects that they were planning on doing, and they just couldn't do it because there isn't enough money. It's gotten terribly expensive.
Of course, oil products are tied into that.
Yeah, oil products, yeah.
And the other thing we do is we do a lot of mag chloride, and that's doubled in the last 2 years. So what we did is when we looked at our road budget last year, we had 40, 45 miles, and we were only able to manage about 20 of those this year just because the dollars aren't coming in.
Well, you had said we have a surplus in the budget this year.
We do. We've got about a six-month reserve. We're probably one of the strongest budgets in any of the western counties.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, and we're not resting on that. We're a very prudent county. Susan's got tremendous financial resources, and the chairman, Tim Glenn, has been managing that, and we certainly hope that Susan will be there next year to be able to take it over and work into that because she's a fiscal master.
Okay.
Thank you for the kind words. Well, I think one area that I definitely am a master in is making the dollar go a little further. We had our own business, as I said, Bristol Excavating, and we sold all our equipment last year, so we're no longer in the excavating business. But, boy, as anybody in this community knows, or this county, that is that not quite close enough? There we go. Okay. Anybody in this county knows that small businesses come and go often, and we've been very successful, put three boys through college, so I'm pretty proud of that, but that means that we make sure that every penny is accounted for and be very, very responsible with all the money that we make. So,
very good. What are some of your personal issues with the county? Are there some pet projects that you have in mind, or some particular projects that you'd like to massage a little or change or work on?
Well, you know, there's always several things that you want to see, but I think one of the most important things is to look at our budget and see what we can afford to do. And, you know, I think it's really important to stick within that budget. Like Jerry said, the commissioners have been extremely responsible with the money, and so you just can't go whipping in there and say, okay, let's do this, let's do that. It has to fit the budget. I certainly would like to see building department have a small office in Buena Vista. I think it would really help the people up there because obviously with the price of gas now, it's hard for people to run up and down that highway a lot.
Well, not only that, but expediency.
Oh, absolutely.
Would be good. I'm a builder myself, and I can tell
you that understand that then, yeah.
I understand building departments on the city and county level,
right,
and even the national level in some cases, but I can tell you that this building department I've dealt with on a regular basis, and I'm pretty pleased with them. They do a pretty good job over there.
Right. I
know Bill.
I agree.
Yeah, they do a pretty good job. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, it's quite a drive from BV to Salida.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have a north office or even an inspector that works out of that area.
Yeah, sure, right, exactly. And I think that would be really helpful to have a small office up there and have an inspector work out of it, but also have some place where you can go get the permit, the forms. You can have somebody explain that to you. You can turn them in. I mean, now you can turn them in at town hall up there, but there's nobody that's going to help you with it. And so if you had an office where you had at least a clerk that could talk to you, that would help, and be able to make your payment right there, your building fee payment and so forth. I think it would really be a great help for the citizens in the north end of the county. Like I said, though, everything has to fit in with the budget. Golly, if we had unlimited funds, I could think of all sorts of neat things, but that's not important. You gotta fit in with your budget, just like at home. You're not going to build on another room if you can't hardly make your payments. So we need to be cautious with that, particularly in these economic times.
I would agree with that.
Jay, a lot of that's going that way, too, and we do have road and bridges up there. We've got a clerk's office. We now have 24/7 in EMS, and we hope to have a new EMS building in the next few months. And again, we're expanding. It's definitely been a growth situation. We're a retirement resort community, and those folks up there are going to demand those services as the budget allows. So they'll be heading that way for sure.
Well, very good. Any other projects that you have that come to mind? I mean, like, what are some of the things you think are wrong that may need fixing? Or tell us a little bit about some of the projects that are really doing really well. I mean, some of the areas.
Jerry mentioned EMS, and I know there's been some push to get a building up there for the EMS. They currently just don't have a good facility. They don't have a place to put the ambulance inside. And there are several different options, but I think that would be an excellent idea. I was talking to a fellow that's with the service not too long ago, and he said, boy, in the winter, it's really a problem, because sometimes when it's obviously very cold, and here we're already getting that it's hard to get the ambulance started.
Boy, especially in the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and isn't
and
that
the things will freeze up
happening
in there. So.
Yeah.
Well, and then they're covered with snow, and then you have to clean them off, and that all
takes
time.
Right, and I, you know, we... Boy, it's been great to have 24-hour service in that end of the county. It's something that was long needed. But there again, we had to wait until we had the fiscal responsibility, the people, the money, the services, and so forth. But now that it's there, then we need to properly take care of it. And certainly a dedicated building that would have a place for the ambulance and have a place for if they want to have a crew stay there or something. I recently heard, too, that the Highway Patrol office that's here in Salida, the captain, I hope I'm not speaking out of school on this, the captain of the district would like to move it to Buena Vista. And I thought, wow, what a good fit to have the ambulance group with the Highway Patrol, because obviously you need all the same kind of radio equipment. So I didn't even mention that, but I think
it makes a lot of sense.
That would make a lot of sense to me, and you know, not duplication. And apparently now, you know, they also cover the patrol office that's here covers Lake County also, and a lot of their troopers are living more towards the north end of the county, and it would be more central. So I thought that was a great idea.
Well, speaking of emergency services, how well do the services that we have communicate with one another, such as city, county police, fire, EMS, are they pretty well connected? Do they have a...
Jay, they're in tremendous shape right now. We had a special exercise over at the school about 4 months ago, mm-hmm. which was a Columbine-type facility where we brought all the resources together, and we got really high marks on that. The folks from outside the county that put that on said they have very few counties that can coordinate like we have, and that was a real plus, I think. It's interesting because I've talked to several people at Colorado counties and incorporated, and they said this is one of the few counties where all elected officials get along, and I thought that was real strange. They said there's counties that don't talk to the sheriff. There's counties that don't talk to their airport. There's counties that don't talk to each other. Down in Plata County, one of the county commissioners has to raise her hand before she can talk. And we just don't have that problem. And we have coordination with the three municipalities and the services. We do need, I think, a Homeland Security person full-time, because at some point in time we'll have an event, tanker trucks turns over, a fire or a flood, that we're going to have to really, and we're moving that way as quickly as we can.
Like an emergency services manager?
Yes.
Something
mm-hmm.
like that?
Yeah, right now it's part-time out at the airport, but the airport's getting busier here, as it is up in Buena Vista.
You know, that's an interesting thing you brought up, the airport. I've often thought since I've been here, that it would be really nice if we could get at least one commercial carrier, you know, to come into this valley.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it was a prop job, I could care less. But, you know, American Express or, you know, United or somebody would come in here, you could probably do a lot more business here, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, I think we're getting a lot closer to that. When I was on town council is when we really worked on the airport up in Buena Vista and got a lot of grants from the
FAA.
I had to think about that for a minute. And to improve the airport and get the runway up there, I know, for a certain, you have to have a certain length in order to have jets.
Right,
and,
right.
Boy, we have a lot of jets coming in and out of there now. At least I live in town there, and I hear them occasionally. But,
and they're jets from Aspen. They'll come over here and park their planes and their pilots because it's cheaper.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's
just corporate jets then.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Corporate or private.
Yeah,
right, right.
Yeah, private. There's several private
Lear
ones.
Jet type.
Yeah, and people that... Believe it or not, people that fly in to vacation in this area, just in this county, and in their jets, it's totally amazing. But
That's good for the economy.
It is. It's very good for the economy.
Some people will always have money no matter what the economy
is. Absolutely.
Unless, of course, they get taxed to death, then they won't. But we'll see.
Well, you know, some of those people figure out how to way to get around that. I was reading a story the other day where Warren Buffett, you know, one of the richest men in America, said he pays less taxes than his secretary does. So I'd like to know a little bit more about that plan.
Well, I don't know if that was a complete truth. It might have been a slight exaggeration.
Really.
But they do, but they do have a lot of loopholes.
Yeah.
But they're legal loopholes.
Oh, sure. No.
And, you know, a lot of companies have gone overseas and offshore because it's cheaper to work there than it is to work here, and they need to fix that.
No kidding.
They need to change that tax law that says that, you know, these companies really want to live and work here and produce jobs here instead of, you know, hiring a bunch of people from another country.
And we would be more than happy to have some of those companies come to Chaffee County. And I think, you know, it's amazing. I really have found out in the last couple of years how many internet businesses operate out of this county now.
Mm-hmm.
And those are businesses you're not going to see because they're not advertising necessarily. But, wow, I guess there's one outfit up in Buena Vista that the gal employs. Friend of yours, weren't you talking about that? I'm looking at Jerry for people that aren't. I guess this isn't television, is it?
No.
Right.
I can't remember who that was. Yeah, and we see, we got 1,700 sole proprietors in the county right now that we know of.
We've got one of the largest life insurance riders, life insurance riders in this state or country here.
Right.
That's right.
So we have opportunities for businesses. I think people, when they hear about, you know, we need more and better businesses in the county, have a tendency to think about manufacturing or something like that. And we've done pretty darn well with some of these other much kinder and gentler businesses, the internet businesses. There is a lady up in Buena Vista, and I know there was a question at one of the forums that said, well, you know, what about that internet business? They don't pay taxes. Sales tax is what they're referring to. Well, of course they pay taxes. They pay a lot of property tax. And I think she employs like between 10 and 15 people.
Which with services, right.
Yeah, and wonderful jobs. And those people pay taxes, and those people can afford to live here. So,
well, you know, the thing of it is that goes down to a basic principle about taxes and, you know, the wealthiest 5%. You keep hearing about the wealthiest 5%, you know, and the 95% that are going to get a tax break in all this business from different people, especially presidential candidates and whatnot. But the reality of it is don't you think that when companies do well, their employees do well?
Right.
And this notion of increasing taxes on the people who are really generating the income just bothers the heck out of me, especially as a business owner. I mean, if my taxes go up, then I have to cut something back.
Sure.
You know? So, I mean, it gets to the point where you almost want to go fishing because you could make as much money just fishing than you could make working the whole day. Seriously.
When I moved in, I had 9 employees, and I was doing full benefits for them. And just the health thing finally made me close the business down. I couldn't afford the benefits anymore. I mean, the benefits were running $22,000, $23,000 a year, and it was just outside the realm of the profit margin.
Well, and that's true. And, you know, you were talking a little bit about, you mentioned medical services for so many people in this county.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, insurance is really difficult to get, especially if someone in your family has a pre-existing condition.
Oh, you might as well forget about it then.
There is no insurance, really,
no.
That means anything. So,
well, the state of Colorado has some sort of a catastrophic fund for people that aren't insurable, but I've never had to look into that.
But it's very expensive.
I'm sure it is.
It is very expensive. It's a high-risk insurance, but it's very expensive.
You know, in People's Clinic, we've been in business now for 2 years, and the very first year that we were in business, we have a clinic both in Salada and Buena Vista, and they're limited hours. They're not open all the time. But the very first year we were in business, we served, I think, 453 people. That's at both clinics, brand new one-time people. Because with consecutive visits, each of those people would come back in. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing. And we actually had some people when we first started the thing up that said, oh, you know, we don't have folks in this community that will need that. They can all pay for their medical care. Well, they can't. They just can't, you know. How many small businesses in this county provide health insurance to their employees?
I would guess very few.
Very few. They can't afford to do that. And particularly the construction businesses, they can't afford to pay health insurance for their employees.
The river outfitters can't. The ski industry can't.
No, it's just
out of sight. Most restaurants don't do it. They'll run swing shifts, so they don't get into the 35 hours.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge.
So it's been great. It's really been good. And there's a small amount that came from the county to get it started, but it's been all grant funded. And we've really appreciated grants from the Colorado Trust, the Colorado Health Foundation, and some of these other private groups that are they really want to see Colorado be the healthiest state in the nation. And I think that's very admirable of them, put their money where their mouth is, so to speak.
Very good. What are some of your future plans if you get reelected? And if you get elected, what are some of your future plans?
Affordable housing is a big issue here, Jay. I mean, the average home in Salida is pushing $300,000. The average income of a family of four is $40,000. Real estate's going up. We've become, like I said, a retirement resort community. So we've got to be able to supply the homes for teachers, nurses, law enforcement, service industry. And we do have a Chafee Housing Trust. I formed that a year ago. We went public with it, so now it's a public entity. The county donated the first piece of property, and that's up by the golf course. Hopefully we'll break ground first of the year, and that'll give us 8 units.
So how do you fund that?
We donated the land. We had a piece of property. We donated that. The county put a small stipend of $5,000 into it. The Colorado Housing Authority is looking for a grant we think we're in pretty good shape on there. And then we're going to go out and we've talked to the banks. Given the property we've got on the line, looks like they will come in with a construction loan. And, of course, as we build those, there's about 480 of these trusts around the United States. They've been in business for even 30, 35 years. The one we modeled out, Colorado Springs, they've got 500 units. So it's a startup. We work real closely with Habitat, who does one house a year. We're trying to get them some more property so they can double up and get more houses online. But that's one of our main challenges. Alternative energy, we're looking at solar farms here. We just came back from a geothermal conference. See if we can get some benefits for that. So those are some of the things. And, of course, the bottom line is our food source. We're looking at alternative farms and new farms to come in because we know that diesel fuel goes to $6, $8, $10 food will get pretty expensive, and we used to produce a lot of food here. So those are going to be three things we're really going to hopefully continue with.
Okay, very good. Anything else you guys want to add to any other project you'd like to see move forward in this county?
Oh, I think just keeping on. We certainly have plenty of different departments, and making sure everybody has enough money to keep operating. I know it's been a challenge for Road and Bridge, not only the price of asphalt, but the price of diesel. And I just certainly hope we don't have a winter like we did last year. I mean, you have to plan for that, but you never can plan for enough. So I think we just need to make sure that we're up to speed and everything. And I'd like to see us doing an energy audit, too, of all the buildings and so forth, so that we can see if there's any way we can improve on what we're doing currently. I think the new or the old, it's hard to call it new or old hospital building that'll be new offices for county and city. What an opportunity there to make sure that it's energy efficient. And that'll be great space, much cheaper than going out and building a building.
Oh, sure.
Which is what social services is just had needed a new building for years and years. And, of course, City of Salida, I mean, if you've been in their offices, you know that they definitely need some more space. It's the only problem, you know, when you have growth in a community. It isn't just that you have more houses and you have more tax base and so forth and so on. You also need more people to run the services, and so it all, you know, works together.
And I think we're going to be a challenge to keep our water. I mean, the Front Range is looking at a million new homes over the next 40 years, assuming we get back into building homes. And the Arkansas is the main target. Our river parks will help that some because they'll become a water right. But, of course, we're dealing with the 800-pound gorilla with Colorado Springs and Aurora. I mean, money's not an issue. If you look at Golden, water taps there now hitting $35,000. In the next few years, they'll go to 50, and the rest of the Front Range will follow. They just add that on to the mortgage.
There's only so much water.
And they want what we got.
And you can only slice it up so many ways before
exactly
there is no
right.
more water.
That's exactly right, and that's why they're looking here. You know, they've got everything else from here on east. I mean, look at South Park. It used to be beautiful pastures with lots of irrigated land, and it's pretty much been sold. So they have to keep moving on west. And now, you know, once all the tunnel was built with the water diversion, then you have a way to deliver it. And so they're looking for this. There's already been a lot of water sold out of this valley, and hopefully not any more will be sold.
So what's your opinion on that? Are you guys going to try to work to preserve our water rights in this valley?
Well, we did with the river parks. We got water rights on those. The Southern Delivery System is a project Colorado Springs is looking on. It'll take water someplace from the Arkansas, pipe it to Colorado Springs, then return it somewhere around Fountain Creek. And Colorado Springs met with us about 4 months ago on the no alternative, which is to take more water through the El Terro pump station. By doing that, they didn't have to deal with Pueblo's 1041 regulations. Well, that's kind of fallen on wayside now, but they're dealing with Pueblo. But we know that they're going to buy water from the lower valley down around the Arkansas, the lower valley, and try to move it up here to move it. There's no question in anybody's mind about that.
Mm-hmm. Right, and yeah, very true. They're looking for water, and we certainly need to be cognizant, which we are, that the water rights in this county that belong to private landowners, there's not a whole lot we can do about that, but I think that we need to help our ranchers become more self-sufficient. They're not making a lot of money. They never have. People ranch because they love it. And
typically that's true.
Absolutely. It's a way of life. And I know there's been several ranchers that if they don't have a good year, they'll sell a little piece of property off here or sell one off there. And they've done that for many years. But sooner or later, you're going to run out of land to sell. And then what do you do?
And you're going to run out of water rights to sell.
And those water rights are valuable. And we're looking at the ways to make them more profitable. We've done the Ranch Land Project, which is looking at small construction or business facilities that would work on a ranch. Conservation easements will help those ranchers, too. That gives them a pretty good legacy up on some cash while they still own the property. So wherever we can make it, again, more profitable for them so they're not forced into selling.
That would be good because I know a lot of the folks around, especially the ranchers, are pretty concerned about their water and where it's going and so on.
Yeah. But it's a huge asset for them. They have a lot of water rights. But you don't just sell a little bit on water because it's very expensive for a municipality. They have to buy it. They have to change point of diversion. They have to change usage. And so it ends up in water court. And it's not
pretty.
But, you know, if you're Aurora.
We have a lot of water lawyers in Colorado, more than the rest of the West does.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And they're all doing well.
Still fighting over water for the last 300 years over
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
Mark Twain said that's the one we'd fight over.
Yeah. Well, when we ranched at Nathrop, we lived on the Davidson place, which is where the Lake County War started back in the 1800s, which was a war over water rights. So I've kind of been involved in water since I first moved here. So it's pretty interesting.
Sure.
Are you guys getting approached by private companies on the water rights?
We think the ranchers are. We know the ranchers are. I mean, it's just a very, very valuable commodity, and ranching's tough. If you're a 75-year-old rancher and you got to go out there and pull a calf or two or 50 in February and dig out the snow, and you say, why not just sell for $10 million and go to Phoenix? So they are, and the idea is how can we make it more profitable for them? We just did a survey with the Ranchland Project from CSU that showed some of the values that tourism feel and the locals feel that are beneficial to ranching. So we do have an opportunity next year to do a 2% sales tax increase to help buy some of the ranch properties, try to lease some of them.
So, I mean, if we get, I guess I'm trying to figure in my mind where all these 2%, you're saying 2%?
2% on additional sales tax.
Okay. So that would be, if it's 2%, are we talking 2 cents?
Yes. Per,
okay. All right. So we have 2 cents there, and then what if the city of Salida adds another, what are they trying to ask for? Is it a 1 or 2 cents?
I think so. Sure.
Okay. So we're starting to get up into the 10 or 12 cents.
Yeah, it adds
yeah.
up.
It does.
And again, it's one of those catch-22s. You want the services. How are we going to pay for them?
Well, you know, there's some things that I spend a lot of time doing research, and I do a lot of it on the Internet, and I'm in contact with a lot of people because part of my program that I do on Tuesday nights is about trying to inform people about what's going on outside of the community or out on the national or international level, mm-hmm. because what's going on the international level is affecting us down to everything.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Everything. And if we're not paying attention to what that is and what their agenda is, then, you know, we may be trying to gear up and get ready for one thing and find out we're being blindsided mm-hmm. in another avenue. And there's a whole aspect out there of going on, particularly on the UN trying to get control of water rights.
Sure.
And so you are familiar with all of that.
Yes. UN okay. says only 8% of the fresh water in the United States, or in the world is potable. It's going to be more worth more than oil if it's not already. So we're headed that way very quickly. And look what happened when we opened up the markets to beef production. I mean, South America just pulled a raid on us, and that's why the ranchers are in the trouble they are. We subsidize the beef coming in from other countries, and the poor fellas here trying to make a living can't compete with that. I bought a hat last week. The cotton was grown in the United States. The hat was made in China. So we grew the cotton, cut it, sent it to China. They manufactured the hat. They got it back to me cheaper than we could do it here. So, I mean, yeah, no, we are now, the globe is flat.
Well, you know, speaking of China, that's a whole other issue for me right there. I'll tell you.
They own us.
Well, they
We're
do.
Owned by a communist country.
Yeah.
We literally are.
Yeah.
And whoever decided to make them the favored nation status, I think that was Clinton, what a mistake that was.
Sure.
I mean,
they
these
took
are paying these guys 25 cents a day to make hats or whatever they're making.
Sure. Yeah.
Go into a store, go into a true, go anywhere and try to find something that's not made in China today.
Oh, my 8-year-old grandkid came up a while back. He said, I want to go to China. I said, what do you want to go to China for? He says, that's where all the toys are made. And he had turned them all upside down. It's all they were all made in China.
Yeah, but you got to watch out for the lead in those toys. Huh?
Well, you know, and that's the thing of it. You know, they're cheap because there's a reason.
Absolutely. Sure, they don't have the controls that we do. Look at the problems with the formula, with the melamine in it. And apparently there's some, it's in other products that are coming into this country. Some of the hot cocoa mixes and things like that I read just the other day. That's incredible. Who knows what's in?
Well, you know, if the jobs were here instead of overseas, you could afford to pay $6 for that hat instead of $3.50.
Sure.
Because you would be making it here.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
You would have the money to pay a little more.
Absolutely, that makes a big difference.
It really does. So I'd like to say, I know you guys are just county people. You're not, you know.
Yeah, maybe we could change that.
There's always so much we could deal with.
But you know what though? The reality of
Actually,
it is.
This is where you start trying to shore up a lot.
Well,
of
you know, and that's the thing. If you don't start at the local level, you have to start where you are.
Yeah.
You have to start in your own backyard first.
And that's why we're looking at alternative energies.
Right.
And we're a full court press to try to get off the main grid. How do we find local food productions? And how can we do houses that are affordable for our community to live in?
Absolutely. You know, and the thing is, just you're talking about China. Well, from what I understand, an awful lot of the oil that's being drilled in Alaska is going to Japan. We don't even use that in this country.
And why do you think that is?
Because they're paying more for it.
Right. So we're going to run into the same situation in water and a whole lot of other things.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just who's got the most money.
All the wood products come off Alaska, go to Japan. They just sink them in the bay there until they need them.
But I really think that we have in this country the mentality and the intelligence to be able to figure out how to solve these problems.
My wife comes from a dairy community. She's Dutch, and her relatives are all into the dairy industry or trucking of dairy products. And her cousin drives truck. It's a milk truck, one of the big semis. He loads up in Chino, California.
Yeah.
And he drives that milk to Nevada and drops his load.
Right.
Drives 2 miles, picks up another load of milk, and drives it right back to L.A.
Yeah. Well,
now, explain that to me. Same thing with eggs. They do that with eggs as well. They ship them out of state, pick up another load, and bring them right back.
Well, now, that's why our food's gotten so expensive.
It's everybody wants to play this little game. And
and I'm guessing that's going to come to a short end quickly at the price of diesel.
Yeah, you can't
well,
fall,
let's
you
hope
can,
so, yeah. Because that's a ridiculous thing, but they can get
our
more for it.
Food's going to go up, though.
If they ship it out of state, they can get more for the product.
Sure.
And I guess that comes down to being prudent and wise with your spending and where and how our money is spent. For those who are out there listening, explain, Jerry, how county government works. Who's at the top of the food chain? Who's at the bottom of the food chain? And kind of how county government works, where the checks and balances are, who's the oversight of how the money is spent budget-wise, who says, yes, we're going to spend it, who says, no, we're not going to spend it, and if it's spent, why did you spend it that way or didn't? You know what I'm trying to say?
Sure.
Who kind of watches the hen house?
At the top of the food chain, the buck stops with county commissioners.
So it's all your fault?
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. I just want to make that clear.
And that gets back to the voters. If the voters said we've been imprudent in spending, they'll make a change.
Right.
We've got all our departments. We don't do any policy for other elected officials. We do set the budgets with the sheriff, the clerk, the assessor, and the treasurer. But we don't get involved in how they manage those operations. But we do work with them on their budgets. That's the only control we've got. And over the last 5 years, I mean, it's been a very amenable.
Yeah, but the budget is like a major control, is it not?
Huge.
Yeah. Well, okay, but you say that you say Sheriff's Department and who else? Road and Bridge?
No, Road and Bridge is a department within. But
okay.
The sheriff is elected, the clerk, the assessor, and the treasurer all elected, and the coroner. So those are elected departments that we don't interfere with how they run that department, but we do work with them on their budget because they have to go to the county for their budgets.
Okay, well, then let me ask you something then. If I have to go to you for money, right, who – how can I put this? What I'm trying to get at is let's say I say to you I need $16 million a year to run my – department, whatever that is.
If you're the sheriff, let's say.
I'm the sheriff.
Uh-huh.
I need $16 million to run my department.
Right.
Okay, fine. Here's your $16 million.
Uh-huh.
Who is it that oversees how that money is spent and whether it's being used efficiently? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
sure.
How do you know that I really need $16 million when I could do just as well on $13 million if I didn't waste three of it?
Well, I think we're doing budget hearings right now,
yeah.
And this is an interesting process. It'd be worth coming through.
Yeah.
Because we know that we've got a finite number. It's about $22 million to run the county. As each one of those departments come in, they're scrutinized right down to not the nickel, but to minor amounts of money. Do you really need this? I mean, no one can say, I need 4 more employees. And each one of those employees is going to cost us $75,000 to $100,000 a year. It just doesn't happen. Now, the one that we really got into it is on the district attorney. There's 4 counties that make that budget cut. It's Lake, Chaffee, Custer, and Fremont. Those other 3 counties aren't in the financial situation we are. When the district attorney came to us and said, I need to bump up my budget $300,000, and the other county said, we're all taking a 10% cut. That's never going to fly. And it didn't. and we're going to continue to have that dialogue because the district attorney, and again, he needs the money, but the money's not there.
So you're telling me that Fremont County, with all its government, I mean, what it's making
prisons.
Up, their prisons and that sort, isn't able to pay their...
They're in worse shape than Chaffee County is.
Well, it just depends on what you've done in the past years. I mean, if you let budgets get out of control, then sure, that's going
to
happen.
Exactly
no
what's
how
happened
much,
to those counties. They spent when they had
money
a little bit,
have.
Now they're trying to back out.
Yeah.
Fremont County is in the process of pulling up its chip seal and going back to dirt because they can't afford to maintain it.
The budget.
Be happy
huge.
You're living in Chaffee County, even though our roads need a little bit of work.
Yeah, our roads do. But yeah, I went to the budget hearings. The budget
now,
hearings.
You don't live in there, and I didn't used to live in Chaffee County.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I live in Fremont County.
You live in Fremont County.
I do.
But
yeah, they're tight. They're really tight.
I went to the budget hearings. They're open to the public, so I went in and listened and looked at the figures and so forth. And it was pretty amazing. I knew of the process, but I hadn't actually gone to some of those until this year. And each of the different department heads comes in and they have their budget and they've got the preliminary figures and they know what they spent last year, and they really have to justify if they want more money for something. You know, like Jerry said, if they need another employee, it's not, okay, here, fine, go ahead. It's, okay, why do you need another employee? Tell us. What's going on?
All right, well, here's an example. You built a jail in, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, 6 or 7.
Is it?
Yeah, fortunately, that wasn't mine, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, but the jail was built, and it says that it was a state-of-the-art facility, right? State-of-the-art.
Well, that's
the 21st century.
That's what they said.
Yeah.
Okay. And we read in the paper just recently about they added a whole bunch of cameras to the jail.
Yeah.
How did that come about? I mean, well, I understand what probably prompted that issue, but I mean, how did they budget that in, or how did that?
Well, I can tell you what I've heard.
Okay.
The jail was built on second-class materials. We spent the last 4 years rebuilding it.
Okay.
Why would that have happened?
What they did is they put it out for bid, and for some reason they took a low bidder on it.
Now, whose job was it to make sure that you know what I'm trying to say?
Sure.
I mean, whose job was it to say, hey, wait a minute, this isn't right. You guys aren't, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Who was paying attention?
Absolutely.
And I know you weren't there then.
That's right.
Okay. So I'm not blaming you. But so things like that don't happen in the future, because the jail is truly... in its condition, one of the largest liabilities in this county.
I don't disagree with that.
It is a huge liability.
Sure.
If it's not run correctly.
Sure.
And I can tell you that the jail is, what I hear, because of the program that I do and the people that talk to me,
sure.
That the jail is horrifically understaffed.
I would disagree with that. I think it's fine. Yeah, and it makes money now, but the materials that went into the jail were not high quality.
No.
And we've had to rebuild it a couple times. The roof's leaked, and we've had some severe construction issues.
What a shame.
Yeah, it was.
You know, there's never enough time or money to do it right, but there's always enough of both to do it over.
I'd like to go back to the budget
of
all the candidates running for county commissioner. Mm-hmm. Susan was the only in there going through the budget, so I'm having a little bit of a problem how somebody says we're going to really fix the county if they have no idea what our budget is. They've never asked for the budget. And when I ran, that was one of the first documents I grabbed. I went into each of the departments the week after I announced 4 years ago and met with each department head for at least an hour and a half. Susan's the only other candidate that's done that. And, I mean, she's fiscally very, very conservative and very, very effective, and it was a pleasure to see her there and say, now, how come you're doing this? I mean, it's kind of like watching grass grow sometimes. It's not the most exciting thing that happens.
Well, I don't know. I kind of find it exciting. I like
do
that
it.
Stuff. Yeah, I'm a number person.
Susan does a tremendous job. Tim Glenn does a tremendous job.
You have to have a bean counter.
Oh, I don't
you know what I mean?
I like that word, but I think, yeah.
But, I mean, you know what?
Let me look. I resemble that.
If you've ever been hungry in your life, you count beans.
Absolutely. Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
I have my hand raised for those of you who cannot see me.
Oh, not television here.
Yeah, right. But seriously, I mean, you know, somebody has to pay attention, like
absolutely.
This jail thing. Okay, let's say you're going to undergo a school project. You're going to enlarge a school or add a school. Or you're going to add a jail or enlarge a jail. It seems prudent to me to have somebody within the county that you can hire or that would volunteer to go over the documents and watch the you know what I'm saying, to manage that project to make sure things are being done correctly and that our money, if
absolutely.
You live in the county, is being spent correctly, yeah, and that somebody is paying attention.
Right.
How do we get you to move up here so you can pay taxes?
Yeah, you want to work on this? No, I think that's exactly the process, though, that they took with the steam plant, wasn't it? That they had a person come in, Cy Gonzalez, wasn't he the one that was that person that managed it? And I guess that was a volunteer, wasn't that?
He and Bob Grether both volunteered. Bob volunteered all his design work. He's an architect.
Yeah.
We're doing that with the new old hospital. Mm-hmm. We have drilled down on an energy audit that Susan mentioned that is state of the art.
Right.
We've looked at the whole mechanical system on what it'll take to get it up to the state of the art. We don't need a mechanical system like the hospital had. We have different needs. And the same with if we go into make changes in there to bring it up to standards for the new offices. That's been a very, very focused project.
You guys talk about the budget, but where does one get a hold of the comprehensive annual financial report?
You can come up and get a copy from us anytime.
Okay, you have copies there available?
Sure. Yeah,
Do you have back copies too, like back years?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, since I haven't been there, I don't know, but I do know last year my son's working on his master's, and he was interested in getting a copy of the county budget, and I just called up Dan Short
the budget's different than the report.
Right.
You can get the report. You
get
the audit.
You get the report, too.
And they go back, and we always, in the last 4 years, we've gotten a sterling, unbiased audit on what we're doing with our money.
And all that stuff.
We get
public.
High marks on that. Very
it's
high
public
marks.
Information.
Okay.
So.
Well, I'm sometimes I've asked for that, and it's been a little difficult on some entities, or they seem to be kind of sparing in the way that you can go about getting them, and that's why I was asking.
At the county level?
No, not at the county. Yeah. I'm not saying at the county
yeah,
level.
Yeah, no, that stuff is. I mean, we'd like to see people come in because we appreciate people are interested.
Yeah, I would. Going back to the budget, though, I know John looked at the budget, my son, and compared it to some other counties. And he said, Mom, it's kind of hard to read. And if you're not a bean counter, it's kind of hard to read. And that might be something that could be worked on for the next year, is maybe a little more readable way. But the only problem is, you do something like that, you need more help. So... there again, we have to balance. What can we afford to do?
Well, Jerry's got free time. He can.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
They told me this was a half-time, part-time job, but I got in it.
Yeah.
They said whatever 70 hours a week you want to work.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I'd heard that in the past. People have asked me because I do have a full-time job as Build a Generation Coordinator, and they said, well, how are you going to do both of those? I said, there's no way. I currently work 50 hours a week, so when I get elected, I'll quit that job, because I think a commissioner is a full-time position. You can't be running another business. You can't have your loyalties divided. If you're going to do the commissioner job, it has to be full-time. Now, you may not have that many meetings the commissioners have to go to, but you have other things in the community that you need to be involved in. If you're not out there going to different meetings, perhaps the Chaffee People's Clinic meeting or some of these other things that I have been involved in, or just getting to know people in the community, what they want, then you're not doing your job.
Okay, I went to the first debate we had here, and I want to know what it is about each one of you to state what it is that's so outstanding about you, or what's different than what you feel that any of the other candidates would do, because when I walked away from that debate... everybody pretty much agreed with each other, and I'm going, where do I make my decision here?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's one thing where you can look at backgrounds, too, and what we've been involved in. I've got several different things started. I've been involved in running my own business, where I've had to really look at what dollars we're spending.
Can we get a hold of these resumes or something so we can kind of look at those?
Sure.
I mean, it's like elected officials. I mean, I have to go get blood drawn and have everything poked and probed if I get a job. So elected officials.
We
don't.
Did too. We
yeah,
did too.
Yeah, yeah. Now that's what I kind of feel like. This has been one long job interview, and I have a website. And all this stuff is on there, SusanBristol.org. Jerry has a website, I think, don't you?
Yeah, Mallet for Commissioner.
Okay.
I think on Melanie, if you've come to the table with a really strong Rolodex, I mean, I can get a hold of the governor in two phone calls. I deal with Senator Salazar on a weekly, if not a biweekly basis. I've worked on his campaign. The head of public health and environment in Colorado is a personal friend of mine. the Director of Natural Resources, a personal friend of mine. I've worked with Department of Local Affairs, which is Energy Impact Funds. The swimming pool was one that just recently they were sitting on $350,000 on their lawsuit. They had that in the bank, and I asked them why they didn't go for a grant. And they said, there's no money out there. Well, I called Deb Downs, who heads up DOLA, and she says, I can go $500,000. We applied for $442,000.
What does DOLA stand for?
Department of Local Affairs.
Okay.
Energy impact funds are those funds that are extracted from extractive resources, oil, gas, and coal. Those are the main ones. That fund has gone from $20 million 4 years ago to $160 million now. And
so why is that? Why did that go up so much?
Because we are drilling holes all over Colorado.
Yeah, they're drilling everywhere.
Okay, so it's not based upon what's coming out of your county, but out of the state. Is that what you're saying?
Or yes.
Out of
the And what happens is each county has an opportunity to apply for grants if they've had some impact from minerals. Mm-hmm. We had a huge impact because we had a climax here at one time, and of course then we went through freefall. The huge impact now, Chaffee County is the only place we're not drilling and exploring at record rates, so we have a big influence of people moving in here. But we've been very successful of getting DOLA grants. We got $500,000 for Early Childhood Center. We got $442,000 for the swimming pool. We got $500,000 for the steam plant. We've got a grant now for $2 million to do maintenance and reconstruction on the new old hospital. I mean, they're competitive dollars. They're not free dollars. Somebody put some money into them. The whole idea with that and federal grants particularly, the idea is to take some of those dollars that we pay into taxes and get them back.
Okay, I was listening to the interview today that you guys did on the League of Women Voters?
Yes.
Was that what it was?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and you made some statement about the seemed like you were stating something to the effect that there's less forest land and less did I misunderstand in BLM than there may have been in the past, or did it
No, those land masses haven't changed since Roosevelt and Pinchot sat around the White House and drew big boundaries on
them.
Then
I must have misheard something.
The national forests in the United States are about 186 million acres.
Okay.
And Colorado's got about 2.5-3 million of that.
Is that when you say that, is that wilderness and everything? Is that what?
No, 12% of the national forest in Colorado is in a wilderness system. Collegiate Peaks, Sangre de Cristos, Buffalo Peaks, because I know I did the boundaries on those when I was with the Wilderness Society, and Browns Canyon proposed.
So, I mean, because when I was looking at a map, what used to be, a lot of it that used to be U.S. Forest Service land seems to be, particularly in Chaffee County, looks to be wilderness area, is it not?
Well, you can have a wilderness area within the national forest.
Okay, so then what do you attribute that land to then when you made that statement? It still comes under
I think the comment was when I did the first inventory on Browns Canyon, the roadless section, the area that qualified for wilderness, was roughly 120,000 acres because of developments that have come in over the last 30 years, because that was in the 70s. There's only 12,000 acres that still qualifies in a wilderness condition. The 120 is still national forest, but it's got other uses now.
Yeah, that's what you're referring to. So that instance
that's
it's
that.
Less.
That's
okay,
right.
All right.
Yeah. So we're talking about doing the Browns Canyon proposed wilderness area. Are you talking about just the non-roaded areas?
Yes, it's a non-roaded area. With the exception, the debate is over the Turret Trail, which runs from the town of Turret into the proposed wilderness about 7 miles. And our proposal is to shorten that to about 3 miles.
I've got a map here. And this was put out by Dr. Michael Kaufman on the Wildlands Project. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I started it.
Okay. So, I mean, ultimately, from my understanding and from his research and everything, those areas are going to be pretty much off limits to your normal travel, and that's a considerable amount of area, is it not?
First of all, the scale on this map, you can't get anything from it.
Right. I mean, it's kind of
as far as new wilderness areas, I don't see anything really happening in the United States. That system was started in 1964. It peaked about 1985, 1990. There just isn't much potential left. And this doesn't show, this map doesn't represent roadless areas that will be closed. What it is it's a stimulated reserve and corridor system to protect biodiversity. But no, these areas will be open for everything they're doing now. Look at the eastern part of the United States. There's nothing there that goes wilderness. There's nothing left.
Well, there's a lot of areas that, you know, you go to try to go to where the roads disappear or they're closed off. Even just within our own state, and like down in Crestone right now, they have a wilderness area that they're trying to close off trails even to walkers, and
Who's trying to do that?
Yeah.
I did that wilderness boundary. I get down to Crestone quite a bit, and I just don't think that's true.
I've never heard of a wilderness area with no trails.
I can get you that information because I do know it's true.
Yeah, I mean, we have put limits on certain areas. Now, where we've really got a limit is on wild and scenic rivers or free-flowing rivers. That was the first natural resource we ran off, and we're definitely getting off the subject. The Selway River in Idaho, it's 39 years to get on that river. The Grand Canyon's roughly 8 or 10.
To get on them.
To run them.
Right, and that's what the whole thing is. When you start closing off these areas, and when they I was listening to some of the park services were closing off their mid-range parks because they weren't as efficient, and so ultimately people were going to be herded into these bigger ones because that they can handle more people, but at the same time, those mid-range ones took the overflow.
Well, wait a minute. Let's back off. The Park Service is bankrupt.
Yeah.
Because the federal government has cut all their resources, and that started with Reagan.
Yeah, but they privatized those resources.
No, they don't. No, they don't. There's no private. There's no national park in the United States that's privatized.
They privatized to concessionaires who got the contracts for collecting the fees and that sort of thing.
That's not necessarily true. Ski areas do it, but again, those fees go back into the general fund. The only resource that we keep here is the one on the Arkansas. When we wrote that legislation, the dollars that the outfitters spent come back into Chaffee County and into Fremont County to protect and enhance that river. It's the most well-managed river in the United States. I mean, there's no question about that. The reason we have limits on places like the Grand Canyon, not because it's a wilderness area, it's because environmental degradation was knocking out all the natural resources.
Right, but what you have in a lot of those instances is the same people that have the same permits, and the rest of the people just have to wait for them to die off or whatever.
No, you do have concessionaires in the Grand Canyon. There's probably 20 people that run out there. You can get a private permit, but they're also restricted. I mean, they don't have free run. They're very, 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 very stringently controlled. I used to be the director of the Western River Guides Association. I work with Congress every week on those things. So, but we've run out of natural resources. And we used to have buffalo where we live in here now. They're gone. Indians are gone. Grizzly bears are gone. I mean, we have basically impacted the planet very severely by our human population, which is not bad, but it's a fact of life. At some point in time, when are we going to say, hey, some of these resources have extreme value to keep and protect?
Oh, I don't doubt that we need to protect what we've got, but unfortunately, I think in a sense, everybody's being herded into these few resources instead of being able to spread out and go to the places that, I mean, there's tons of places to go in Chaffee County where you don't have to be around people, but it seems like as the years go by, they're getting to be where fewer and fewer of those places are available for the people.
Well, what we've had is just a tremendous explosion in outdoor recreation. I mean, if you look at the use of the national parks, and before 1945, it was zero. You look at the resource degradation and the growth in outdoor recreation, it's been exponential every 10 years. Colorado generates about $220 billion in outdoor recreation.
Well, look at how many outdoor businesses we have around here, not just the rafting companies.
Yeah, but
stores.
Where else did we go when we didn't have any jobs? We had to go into that business, did we not?
It's a business, a lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's
kind of
like ranching.
It's lifestyle, but, yeah. I mean, you know, we had to find...
Well, tourism.
Tourism had to be where we were.
Yeah.
Because
sure.
What else did we have?
But that was not an industry before 45.
No.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
And it's grown because we've got more recreational time. We've got a lot more recreational tools and toys. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look, stand out on 50 and watch the ATVs go by or the four-wheel drive vehicles go by.
Well, or the RVs.
Yeah.
it's huge.
Well, you know, even within Colorado, they've restricted ATV use and access to a number of areas.
Sure.
And
they've done that to protect the resource.
Yes, they have. Yeah. Yes, they have. But if you have a road that already exists, then are they trying to, stop the use of those roads so that they will turn back into a natural area? Or are they going to leave the roads that are there and allow you to use them?
In almost all cases, I'm going to say 99% of the cases, any road that's on the National Forest or Bureau of Land Management mm-hmm. is going to remain. Now, the Forest Service, BLM, may say we've got a resource degradation problem here, and we're going to have to either rest rotate it or we may close in some areas.
Because I know there is areas like in California where I used to hunt quite a bit. My dad's been hunting there since the early 40s. And I've driven those Jeep trails back in the middle of nowhere in Lockwood Valley for decades. And then all of a sudden, they closed that whole entire section to any motorized traffic whatsoever.
Sure.
All of it.
You know, some of that, though, is a financial cause because, like Jerry said, they have no money in there, so they have less and less rangers, and they can't patrol those areas. And so, obviously, if you can't get in there and patrol things, you close some of that stuff. So, it's been a problem. The government has been so scaled back in some areas, and I don't think people realize that. There's a lot of campgrounds that I don't understand why they can't stay open except for the fact that they don't have enough personnel. So...
Well, it's the top of the hour, and you are listening to KHENLP 106.9 Salida. And I just want to tell you that the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors.
Oh, you're a little slow on getting that one out.
Even though they might should be, they don't have to be.
Or anybody else. right.
I don't mind restricting some areas and some access. I just want to make sure that it's if you're going to have access, you're going to have access to every and anyone. As an example, if you only allow access by foot traffic, then it leaves a lot of handicapped people out.
Or horses. Or mules. We have mules.
Do you?
Yeah.
I have horses. But the idea is that it seems to me that with so many people trying to get more access for the handicapped to enjoy some of these areas, that to restrict it to foot traffic, horses, bicycles, or mules.
Donkeys,
yes, burros. llamas. That you're restricting it from some of the handicapped folks as well. That would only be able to enjoy these areas if they could drive there. So I
agree. I mean, again, it's got to be a balance, and that's a challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, we quit making land a long time ago.
When you were doing all this lobbying, whatever, for whatever organization, who were you
I was working for the Wilderness Society. I was their Western Field representative.
And what is the agenda behind the Wilderness Society? I mean, what does it really want to encompass?
I think the idea, if you look at the Wilderness Act, is to basically protect certain areas that have natural and pristine qualities for historical, wildlife, watershed, culture, those things.
Okay. So how does that tie into the heritage areas?
Heritage areas, for the most part, are a state basis, and they're much smaller areas.
Because from what I understand, they made a national heritage area out of Park County, Castilla, and Conejos.
I wasn't aware of that.
Just happened within the last year or so, and Salazar was behind that. And there's some more, I don't know if it's being solidified in this Omnibus Act that's coming up this next month or so, but it isn't just those areas. But from what I could, you know, I've not run across the national heritage areas like I had world heritage areas,
sure,
and scenic byways and things like that. This, uh-huh, is kind of a, uh-huh, new term I hadn't seen, and I hadn't, you know, when I watched this for this kind of legislation, I, you know, it was new, so I had to start asking around various researchers that I kind of in contact around the country to kind of look into this. And from what I understand, they don't really have to ask permission to even get these areas designated or get, you know.
Melanie, I've done wilderness hearings when I've walked in, and everybody in that room was armed but me.
Well, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt
that. We did
that.
Ask permission.
No, but what
so
I'm
what,
trying to
what
say.
So what do heritage areas do? What?
Well, that's what we're trying to find out.
Oh, okay.
Here's what Salazar did. He's looking at a wilderness area for Escalante, Rocky Mountain, which is a national park. It's, mm-hmm, been on the agenda for, I did that first proposal in 71, and Browns Canyon. Those are the three areas that are before Congress introduced by the senator.
Okay, right.
Those are the ones I'm aware of. Escalante is maybe 50 to 75,000 acres. I think Rocky Mountain is probably around 250,000 acres, and Browns Canyon today proposed is 20,000 acres.
So you're not familiar with the ones about Park and Castillo and Canales then?
No.
Okay,
I'm just not.
Well, I'll have to look through my. I know.
I don't know if anything in Park County even qualifies anymore.
It was kind of strange when we saw it kind of come up. But see, I mean, I don't sit there and try to become an expert in all areas. What I'm looking at is an overall picture on, uh-huh, things, and then my whole desires is just kind of make people aware of things, what's going on around them, and what the overall picture could be if they want to look into it. I mean, it's not like I'm trying to take
good.
On each and every issue.
No, it's just information. You're trying to get information out. Maybe
right,
it has
right.
something to do with the mining heritage.
You know, I didn't see the word
mining
tied into it.
Well, sometimes in the heritage areas, that's one of the things they're talking about. Is
mm-hmm. Well, when you have your world
like
heritage
Leadville,
sites
you
that
know.
are designated, those those aren't really mining. Those, I mean, we've got national parks now.
Oh, there's
all,
yeah, no,
sites.
There's all other kinds. There's other mm-hmm. kinds. I mean, we're a huge heritage area here in Chaffee County just naturally because of the ranches that are here that have been here for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The place we lived on in Nathrop, I think, was started, well, it had a really early water right, and so I hate to even hesitate, 18-something or other. 1885 or 1890.
You weren't here then, were you?
No. I came a little after that. So.
Okay. Well. You
nice
know,
guy, huh?
I wasn't here either.
Yeah.
Well, part of the reason why I'm looking is this: there's just little things incrementally, bit by bit, that you don't really notice, that it's kind of eroding property rights.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Well,
and
you know, look at the erosion of civil rights in this country over the last.
I'm not sure we have any left, do we?
No.
I've talked to several people who think not, actually.
Yeah.
And I think that's the property rights. I think I can't think of a commissioner that I'm aware of, and I go back probably 10 or 12 commissioners, that wasn't very strong on private property rights in this county.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you get into other regions, Front Range, or other places, I mean, it's a different agenda. But, I mean, I ran on a private property rights agenda. I'm a Western Democrat. I belong to the National Rifle Association. I feel the Second Amendment is very important. I feel the First Amendment is very important. But we're very strong on protecting the property rights, particularly the ranchers. I mean, those are the ones that are, I think, in jeopardy. And also, hopefully, as I mentioned before, they can stay in business and be profitable. Because they're probably the endangered species.
How is Chaffee County being impacted by the our border issues, you know, with the legal aliens, or I don't know what the term is now because I can't tell whether they're legal or illegal anymore. But are we being impacted much?
Well, I know that I think ICE picked up a number of possible illegal immigrants probably a month and a half ago, and they were in the local jail. I don't see anything here on an ongoing basis. I think these folks were traveling through.
Mm-hmm. But whereas certain counties around us have to be being impacted quite a bit.
Yeah, they have a lot more jobs. That's the thing. I know up in Summit County, they certainly have a lot of. And I don't know if they're legal or illegal.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
There are lots of illegal aliens everywhere.
Everywhere.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
There's no way around that.
Well, I can't tell by looking at them.
Of course not.
Or listening to them.
I know exactly anytime right. we do a contract, we've got that whole alien clause that goes into it.
Right.
If we're dealing with somebody else outside the county, another entity, if they're bringing a service to the county.
Mm-hmm. Everybody has to be a resident legal.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I know that, like for social services, the county has provided Build a Generation in Buena Vista an office in the social services building, and that's one of the things that everybody, if they apply for any services, they have to produce a birth certificate. And it can't be a copy. It has to be the original. So I know that's changed in the last 2 years, mm-hmm. but I don't really know what other things have happened. We presumed when we started Chaffey People's Clinic that we would have, that we would have Spanish-speaking people that would come to the clinic, and that hasn't been true, and I don't know why. I would hope that if people need medical care, no matter what language they speak, they would come to the clinic because we certainly would offer them services.
Well, you know, I've been kind of surprised myself that I haven't seen that many here overflowing into this area where you can just go over a pass or two and, you know, they're everywhere. I mean, I'm not saying that they're illegal either,
yeah,
but you find a lot of work crews that don't speak English.
Yeah,
well, if you look on the I-70 corridor, I was over in Rifle and there were 5 cars from Chihuahua last time I was there working on oil rigs.
And I'm yeah. curious as to what is different here that has not...
We probably don't have those jobs.
We don't have the jobs, yeah.
They can't afford to stay here.
They can't. You know, people that have lived here a long time are having a problem staying here.
Yeah, I've heard that, you know, unless you come here with money, you'll never be able to stay here without it because it's hard to get a job.
And they won't let you leave with it either?
Well, everybody in town's got jobs. Everybody's got 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly, because they're not making a real wage anywhere.
But they live here for quality of life.
Sure. Yeah.
Well,
they do.
Well, and there's people that have lived here a long time, not near as many as there used to be. But
sure. Is there anything in the works for trying to create more and better jobs here in the county?
We're trying. That's a challenge we see every day. We've got some transportation impediments bringing people in. Being a retirement resort community, land prices are through the roof.
Right.
It's a lot easier to do a new business in Pueblo or Fountain, Colorado, or Walsenburg, or places like that.
Well, it seems to me that a lot of the people that my clients are people who either have a second home here and live and work and create their wealth elsewhere, or they are retired with a pension
right.
or have sold
right.
property and did well and came here and bought
yeah.
and are living off of a pension or something of that nature.
No, that's exactly true. I did a study a couple of years back for Build a Generation that we presented to the commissioners, and of the income in this county, of the spendable money, 50% was non-earned income. In other words, those people weren't currently working. They had pensions or trust funds or something like that. And
or used to have a 401k
yeah,
or
well.
Something of that nature.
That's why I said we've become a retirement resort community.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
what's
yeah.
driving up property values, and that's why the housing, affordable housing, is a challenge.
It's very difficult. So.
Now, do we have transportation for some of the elderly here? I mean, I've seen some of the vans that come around. They have transportation.
There's neighbor to neighbor, mm-hmm. and they come to Salida on a schedule from Buena Vista, and I certainly would like to see that expanded, but then again, you know, that costs money. But it would be wonderful if we could somehow tie in with the railroad since there are tracks, but mm-hmm. that may be a bit of a pipe dream at this point. But you know what? Pipe dreams sometimes work out in the long run.
You know, that's another interesting thing. You brought up the tracks. I'm glad you mentioned that, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
These tracks sit out here, okay,
yep.
and they're not used, and
no.
they haven't been used for
20 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of decades.
Yeah.
Why not?
Because
dollars aren't there. Doesn't make sense to run.
Yeah.
Union Pacific owns
them. Wait a minute. Have you seen the semis run up and down this canyon?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Believe me, there's enough merchandise being run up and down this canyon. A train would be a wonderful thing, nothing of the ski people coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
The railroads thought they were in the railroad business and forgot they were in the transportation business, and the trucking industry took them out.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Sure.
I mean, wonderful.
Well, you've got the depot in Canyon City that runs that short line little tour.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be nice if they could come up here and, you know, they could get a shuttle to Monarch and so on.
We've talked to those folks twice a year, and really? They said it's not financially feasible to run that train up there.
Yeah.
We'd love to have it go.
There is some legislation that, and I'm not remembering which entity that that was working on it last year, but that the Highway 50 area was designated a utility corridor, and it's kind of at some points it's as wide as 3,500 feet, and of course that one I didn't think to bring that information, but we're kind of looking at it. It's kind of curious because we didn't quite understand why they were designating that whole area, but it seems to run all the way up to the Montrose area and then kind of goes up and down that that highway. Is that 160? What is that?
From Montrose to
Grand Junction?
Grand Junction.
It
also goes south from there, too. It was designated a utility corridor, and the mapping on it is really strange, but it was just something that they've been in fact there was a disc that was put out by, I don't know if it was a park out of Canyon City, and I'm not sure the entity now, if it was the Park Service or who, that was doing the mapping on it.
Melanie, I'm not aware of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's just...
Salida used to be a huge railroad town.
Right,
and
it did.
I certainly...
But this one wasn't... It wasn't shown on this part. It only went east and west.
Yeah.
50.
Well, the interesting thing is if you had... if the train did run...
Yeah.
Even if it just ran... Not only just for cargo, but for passengers as well.
Yeah.
You know, you could have people working in Canyon City, Pueblo, and living here, you know, and commuting. I think it'd be a great thing. I mean, it just seems like it just would be a great thing.
Well, that's true. It would. I remember the last train that came through Buena Vista, and everybody went down to see it come through. But, you know, it's just like in Denver, where people didn't want fast tracks. And then every single line they've built... I better not pound on the counter here and get a scowl.
You'll hear
it. I know, I can hear it. In Fast Tracks, everything they've built, when they open that up, they find out they don't have enough trains, they don't have enough parking, because people love riding that. My son lived in Englewood and could walk out the back door of his apartment building and get on the light rail and ride downtown to his job with Quest. He loved that, and he said it was so neat. It was always full. People had their bikes, everything. It was wonderful.
You know, that's the interesting thing you say. You know, they say it's not economically feasible to run that train up here. But, you know, if it did run, how many people would come? And you know what I'm trying to say?
Sure,
Jay.
I mean, to me, it would be worth a try.
No, I think
what
I
the
agree.
Heck? What do you got to lose?
Neat.
I mean, you know, you have so many accidents in this canyon. It is ridiculous.
It's terrible. And those trucks.
I mean, it is.
The trucks.
Yeah.
How long have you lived down there?
3 years.
3 years. Oh.
And there's been a number of accidents, and one was propane, two propane trucks. One was a propane truck itself.
Yeah.
One was a semi-flatbed carrying the 5-gallon tanks.
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, I was on the scene when that one went over.
Oh, boy.
I was there.
Were you on the wrong side of the getting through?
No, I was there when it happened.
Oh.
I was right behind the guy maybe 3 minutes.
Oh, you're kidding. Wow.
Oh, yeah. So I stopped and...
Yeah,
did all that.
Yeah.
And then I went into Swiss Rail and diverted traffic. It turned them around there.
No, that canyon's just an accident waiting to happen all the time. There's been so many accidents.
Right. And so I would like this. It would be nice to have just a small...
commuter rail type?
Something.
Anything,
you know, to make use of those. Otherwise, you know, we're talking about all these wilderness areas and, you know, and all of this. Then let's tear the tracks out and let's clean that up and make it a bike trail.
That came up, and the federal government said, no way.
Yeah,
of course not. They want those tracks there.
They kept it in a reserve status.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now they're cutting down all the telephone poles that carry all the wires up there, and they're just leaving the poles on the side of the...
Really?
Along on the other side of the
river. They're just laying there.
Yeah.
Trying to work with the railroad, though, too, is difficult, because in Buena Vista, we tried to work with them because they own so much land on each side of the track right in the very middle of town.
Right.
And we said, well, you know, we'd really like to be able to use some of that property, at least put parking lots in and so forth. And they were just like, they wouldn't even talk to us.
Really?
No, they wouldn't even talk to us. And to try and get them to come fix the crossing right there in the middle of town.
Right.
you have to wait until it's totally falling apart before they even come to do that. So
you don't have a chainsaw?
Difficult. Oh, yeah, that's the way to do it.
Well, we have made some gains on right now with the trail in Salida.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're talking to the railroad about a trail from Marvin Park down to the F Street Bridge, and then from F Street Bridge on down to the confluence with the Little River.
They're starting to change.
I
want to
know how
too.
You did that. From what I understand, the railroad is hard as heck to get.
Well, get up. You keep working at things sooner or later.
I think in part they want to make sure they have a hold on the trespass issue on the other side of the river. And they're working at that. There are some underpasses so that folks can either bike or ATV or hike under those underpasses to get up in the BLM land. I think they'd really like to close that out. And I think one of the deals was if they worked with the trail, that would be able to fence what they mm-hmm. wanted to keep mm-hmm. people off. Because the people are there all the time.
Right.
So I think maybe a little different mood. We've been dealing with the railroad since I've been here. We've had pretty good contacts. We worked with them on the river park. Took a couple of shots because we had to go on their side of the river to do the work for the park. And it took two times to meet with real estate and before the final guy says, yeah, go ahead. But first of all, they didn't even know where Salida was. And second of all, it took a little bit to get to the right person. But that's how we built the river park here. BV was somewhat of an issue, but down here it was a big issue. And they are. They're a big bureaucracy.
Yeah,
so
they are.
A little bit work.
But I've heard that too.
Now, when you were
starting
talking
to
about
be easier
the
to talk with.
When you were talking about the Wilderness Society, who funds the Wilderness Society?
It's membership. 90,000 members when I was there. Sierra Club, Trout Unlimited, Audubon, Sometime Agency.
You don't. Are you aware that there's other? There's nonprofit. I mean, there's money behind that. Even are you somewhat familiar with that?
In what regard, Mel?
What do you mean?
Like Rockefeller money or things along that lines?
No.
You're not familiar with it?
I used to do their fundraising. I know who's behind it.
When they started up. Okay, well,
I'm
just
asking.
They
started up in 1939 with a grant from Bob Marshall, who put $2 million into it.
And Bob Marshall is?
Well, at that time, he was a forester.
Okay.
He's since passed away. I think all three of the brothers have passed away since then. They were the last two, Jim and John, were older people when I was there. Marshall died at a very early age of basically overextension. He was the only person in the United States that the natives would deal with in Alaska. And he started the organization as a forester with private money from himself. And I know who they get their money from. And they do some foundation grants, but most of it's from the general public because I've done their fundraising.
Okay, but who would the foundations be?
Gates, Coors, Anschutz possibly, Mellon Foundation maybe, Donner Foundation down in Colorado Springs. I know they've put some money into it. And these have been grants of $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 maybe upside. I mean, they don't have a huge endowment or a large budget. They're pretty, close to doing business very, very stringently. I mean, they don't have large budgets. It's not like, Salvation Army or the Red Cross or those other organizations.
Okay, well, that's I knew there had to be some kind of an NGO behind it somewhere before they ever even got started in
that. Yeah, no, Bob Marshall started it again. He was a forester. He saw the issues that were happening, and he was the fellow that brought it in. Art Carhart and Aldo Leopold came in very heavily in the late 40s, and, of course, they saw degradation coming, and they were heavily instrumental in protecting some of these areas. Carhart came out of Flat Tops and Aldo Leopold started down in New Mexico as a range manager, actually doing predator control until he realized he was killing a lot of wildlife that should be around.
Huh. Was Bob Marshall the Bob Marshall Wilderness
guy? Yes, up in Montana.
In Montana, yeah. Well, I really need to bow out here so I can
All right, well, thanks
home.
For being with us. Yes, you have quite a drive ahead of you, so thank you for being with us, Susan.
It's a lot longer at night. I don't know why that is.
Watch for the deer and elk on the road.
Yeah, no kidding.
They do scare me. I really like to wait at the junction up there until a semi goes by and then get right behind them. But this time of night,
they'll clear a path for you.
Oh, they do good. Well, or, get behind a car. And I'm thinking, I don't think they know what's alongside here. It's usually somebody from out of county, 70 miles an hour at night. Well, I don't know they drive
not
that
on Revenue
fast.
Road. Not on that road, you're not. No. You, for a minute, maybe.
Actually, there was a patrolman out there on 291 when I was coming in. I don't know if there had been
shock.
An accident or what. Yeah.
You know, that's the interesting thing. You know, we were talking about this the other night. 285 is like, it's always known, obviously, as Revenue Road.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
You hardly ever see anybody on 291.
On 291, no.
On 50.
No.
Anywhere.
I've seen a state patrol on 291, I think, twice this year.
They're just going someplace.
Well, no, they had people stopped.
Oh.
They were.
Now, they'll be down there by the bridge before you hit there. Now,
yeah,
I had to go back and forth quite a bit.
Yeah, because the sheriff's department, they patrol mm-hmm. down, but up on 285, not so much. So, yeah. But anyway, I really appreciate being on. It's been
yes,
fun.
Yes, well, thanks for
I've
being
learned
with
a lot
us.
Of stuff from Jerry. He's a wealth of information about forest and wilderness, and something that I am not near as familiar with. But if you have any questions on old times in Chaffee County, well, that sounds bad. I haven't been here that long.
But you're astute of it.
Well, I am. I like history, and I really, you know, like the Lake County War that started up there at Nathrop. It's very interesting to see that 100 years ago, more than 100 years, people were fighting over water, and hopefully it doesn't revert to some of that, because in that war, there were several people that were killed, and there were vigilantes running all over the county. And
Nothing like a little frontier justice.
Oh, boy, that's for sure, and that's when it was Judge Dyer was killed up in Buena Vista, so it was a very, very brutal time. So,
you bet.
Yeah, we don't have to resort to that. We have law and order now, right?
Let's hope so.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank
Good
you.
Night.
Good night, Susan.
Good night. You know, I was curious. I mean, you've been giving quite a bit of information on the, with your background, and there is a large faction in the country that doesn't, that has total opposing opinions about what's going on, and part of it may be more of a on the area of co-opting of these
public lands
and that's and that sort
about
of thing.
Starting a war,
right? And you know, and I think that's an avenue that really needs to be addressed by those that you know are working on this environmental thing, because ultimately. I'm not used to wearing them tonight. I'm used to not hearing it.
I'll help you. Don't worry.
So, I mean, I'm open to any information that you can bring along that lines, because I really have been looking at this issue, and I do hear from people that are speaking out from the other side quite a bit.
I do, too.
Right. Well, I'm sure you do.
we had a meeting up in Buena Vista probably a month and a half ago, Senator Salazar in Browns Canyon, and we had 275 people there, and they were split down the middle.
When we have so many wilderness areas around us, it is kind of hard for people to understand why we need another one, you know?
Well, that's like Browns Canyon, for an example. We have 50 head of bighorn up there. There's no biological exchange. They're being treated for both lungworm and pneumonia now. We think that's a fairly important species. It's tremendous winter range for elk and deer, because everything to the west of there is private. And, of course, they get pushed across the river into the Browns Canyon there in the wintertime for escape cover. We've got pretty good population of mountain lion over there and a pretty good population of bear. And it's a very, very small area. And, of course, large species like that need a lot of real estate. And it's just a question, do we like to keep them?
And they're not going to survive out in the other parts of that area?
Well, you look
at those
ranchers.
I mean, it's not like it's highly populated.
But you talk about those ranchers. I mean, a herd of elk could come in and eat every stick of hay they've got. They don't want those elk on their property in the wintertime. That's why you have a private land tag. It's because you need to get some of those elk, I mean, basically out of those ranches. And that's where they spend their winters. You can drive up and down the valley in December, January, February, and you'll see those elk in somebody's hay meadow. And, of course, we panel that hay as much as we can, but a herd of elk can just wreak havoc on a rancher.
I don't doubt that in the least.
They say nothing of the fences they have to repair.
Yeah, I mean, again, somebody goes in and you pull a shot off, and elk will take out a quarter mile of fence as they just run through it. And they'll either tear it down or pop strands. I mean, a cow elk, if it has to go after a calf, will knock a fence over or break it.
Okay, what about for sheep that are down like, Bighorn Sheep Canyon as opposed to in that area? Are they getting the same kind of effects? I mean, are they
stressed. I mean, they're stressed by the other big game, of course, and they don't have a lot of private land they can go on. Sheep are the last ones down. Elk and deer will move them out all the time. And again, it's not a threatened species. They do pretty well in Colorado, but it's not a growing population because they're susceptible to diseases. Domestic brought in lungworm, of course, that went into the wild sheep, and we do treat them. But the 50 head up in Browns Canyon, I mean, they don't have another area they can interchange with or populate with. So it's a threatened species up there.
Well, is the sheep population staying steady or growing down in the canyon?
I think it is to some extent, but again, it's a threat. It's a species that doesn't do well because they have so much more competition with everything else.
Or how about up there around Cottonwood, around in Buena Vista?
I think there's small herds up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, at one time that was a plains animal.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, most of us elk were a plains animal. Mm. They had to adapt. When Lewis and Clark came in and got in the mountains, they damn near starved to death because there wasn't any to eat. If it hadn't been for some of the Indians they ran into, they would have died.
Hmm.
Of course, coming across, they did real well with buffalo, and that was the meat of choice. It dried well. It did well. I mean, it was high protein, even with the Indians. I mean, they would do after buffalo before they do elk or deer, and they were a lot easier to get to. But by the time Lewis and Clark got into the mountains, I mean, they were stressed. They didn't realize what they were into.
So they're migratory animals, are they, or do they pretty much stay in a territory?
The sheep?
Sheep or elk or deer.
Elk will migrate quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll move 40, 50 miles a night. Deer, not quite as much. Sheep basically don't move that much. I mean, they'll stay in an area. And sheep are pretty easy to get close to. You've seen some of the researchers actually get within 5, 10 feet of sheep. Because, I mean, that's how come they got shot so easy, because they didn't really have a lot of fear of man.
Well, now you go to Cottonwood Hot Springs, and they walk right up to you. They're amazing.
They come right close to you. Yeah, uh-huh. They've got...
They'll just look you in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, they will.
I think we ought to have a bow season in the city limits of Salida, for Pete's sake.
I don't think any of the county commissioners would recommend that. Talk about getting recalled.
Yeah, no kidding. Huh?
It should be the same day.
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess if you're going to live in a town where the deer can come in and eat your flowers, you can't complain.
Yeah.
I've been kind of amazed at how the people up on the mesa get so ravaged by them, and yet on our side of town, you get them maybe a month or two a year, but they don't seem to be near as bad as they are.
No.
There.
It seems whatever the food source is, it's real desirable. But back to public lands, I mean, we've got a serious timber problem in Colorado. I mean, if you go down the I-70 corridor, the damage there and the deadfall is just... I mean, horrendous, and I don't know how they're going to get to it.
And the beetle kill, yeah. I mean, unbelievable.
I mean, some of the lower stuff they can get out, and they can get a process out of it, chip it, or use it for mm-hmm. woody biomass, but you get some on those steep slopes, I mean, it's going to be a fire situation. And, of course, that all happened in the turn of the century when that was the product here. We used it for houses, used it for fuel, used it for timbers, used it for railroads, and we basically leveled all the forests, and now they've come back even age. And, of course, extremely susceptible to beetle kill. And
so what has changed now from what it maybe was 20, 30 years ago? Are they taking care of these forests differently?
Not really. Fire is a natural deterrent in forest. That's why we got the aspen. Because anytime you see an aspen grove, you know a fire went through, because that's the pioneer plant that comes in. And when we put a suppression situation, smoky bear, on forest, we basically changed the ecology and the culture of forest. And we've developed a lot of old forests that are susceptible to disease, and now we're paying the price.
Yeah. You know, there's been a lot of controversy about whether to let a fire burn or really work hard to put it out, you know?
Sure.
And I think a lot of times we make the mistake of trying to put every fire out that, you know, I mean, you have to preserve homes, obviously, but... you know, it's like when Yellowstone burned, they were complaining that it was going to be just completely devastated, and it was da-da-da-da-da. But now the elk and the deer herds have come back.
Phenomenally.
Oh, there. Absolutely. And the forest is healthier now than it's been in decades.
Yeah, it was a cleansing situation.
You bet. So.
But now we've built into those fringe areas. I mean, Methodist Mountain, that's where I live. And, of course, you've got a lot of timber up there. You've got
a matter of time in this valley. I mean, this whole area has been spared for some reason. I mean, it just seems like there's no evidence of any
major
fires anywhere in the area here.
No.
So it seems to me that it's just going to be a matter of time before something happens.
Yeah, and a lot of the pinyon is invaded. I mean, this was a lot more of a ponderosa forest 150 years ago, and the pinyon's invaded, and it's a drier species. And as a result, the land around us is drier than it was when white man first showed up, because we've changed the ecology. If you go up to Browns Creek, off County Road 270, the forest has gone in there and really taken out a lot of the understory. And it looks like almost in the wintertime a Serengeti, because you've got grasses and you'll have 200-300 head of elk in there. And the idea was to pull them off the ranches, give them another place to winter, and they've done a great job up there. But they're doing controlled burns up there 4 or 5 times a year now, try to get that fuel load down.
Well, last year they had that burn up there in Hayden Creek down by us, but that was really a lightning strike that they just let burn.
Yeah. And I think that they can do it if there's not a public safety. And
it was pretty high up on the mountain, way up. And I talked to one of the guys down there, one of the firefighters down there, and he said they went out there and looked at that, and they said, nope, we're not fighting this fire. It's just too hard to get to.
And it's expensive.
And it is expensive, and they said there's no reason to just not to just let it burn.
Sure.
So they did. And I think that's a good thing.
I think if you can, and again, from the standpoint, ecology does pretty good to get out of control. You get into some of the California fires or Idaho, and, God, they'll go 250,000 acres, 500,000 acres, and lots of damage.
Oh, yeah, and Glenwood Springs up above there, they've had a couple of different fires in the last 10 years or so that have been pretty extensive. I mean,
big
huge.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah, and those are not cheap to put out.
And the agencies, I mean, they're restricted in funds. It's unfortunate because, again, campgrounds are closing, and a lot of the natural resources that we use and benefit are harder to get to.
I wanted to give you a couple of things, and you may already be aware of these terms, and whether it means anything to you or not at this point, I just consider myself the kind of the the missionary of certain information, I guess. because this is having a huge effect, like Agenda 21, on people in our world. And if we're not aware of what it is and what is behind it, then those of us on a local and national and international level are going to not be aware of some of the things that appear to be accident that may not be so accidental. And since you seem to be up on the history of a lot of these organizations or whatever, then there's a movements that were set about at the turn of the 20th century that play right into this. Now, and say like if you created an organization and it was to be a benevolent organization, but it got co-opted, kind of like a business or a corporation does, and it can kind of change its path or agenda and end up being something that it wasn't initially created. That's kind of what I'm trying to awaken some people's eyes of what's going on around us, because they send in these people called change agents, and they do this Hegelian dialectic and Delphi technique and this sort of thing in groups, and it doesn't mean that it necessarily has to be bad, but...
Do we have those folks here?
Oh, you go to a meeting and you find that a facilitator, a lot of that takes place in meetings. I mean, they're training them in the colleges.
But how about here in Chaffee County? Are you aware of anything like that?
The roundtables went for instance.
The county roundtable?
Right.
How'd
and even even
through?
Though it's very subtle how it takes place until you watch the technique, because these people are being, some of them may not even be aware of the technique that they're being trained in, but that's what's happening is they're trained. I mean, when I went to college or whatever, I was told this is how you do it and this is why we do it and whatever, but when you'd go and do it in practice, then you'd stand back and you'd go, now why am I really doing this? Because something doesn't seem to match up in continuity. And that's what is kind of going on us around us in the world in a lot of ways. We think that we're socially engineered people. I mean, that's just the way what happens to us. And by if we've got people in the world who decide that they want to create a world that does manufacturing, then they will gear up the money and put it into the manufacturing. And if they decide they don't want to have manufacturing anymore and they don't want to run into certain petroleum, say, and they want to go into alternative energy, then they'll start throwing money there. And then we will be educated in those directions. Well, that can be a good thing. But
the military
also
does that all the time.
Right. And
I mean,
the
if we're
going to
brainwash people.
That's exactly what I'm trying to talk
the
about.
County commissioners aren't doing that, Melanie.
I guarantee you
they were not doing it.
I'm not saying you are. What I'm trying to say, there's a technique that is going on a level national and internationally that is coming in and engineering change. Why do you think you're hearing change so much in our language? And when you hear the term sustainable and green, what does that mean? It's gotten to be used so much. It's kind of like the word love. What does that mean?
Well, sustainable is pretty straightforward. I mean, if you cut down a tree, you replace a tree. That's sustainable forestry.
Okay.
I mean, and then what happened in the 60s, we went to allowable cut. And that's when we put a rate on the national forest, good, better, and different, because that's where the profit motive was. But, again, any of that stuff will get co-opted. I mean, that's just life itself.
I mean, everything on TV now is green and sustainable. And you wonder, now, if it takes more chemicals or whatever or more energy to produce it, where do they draw the line on this? Or, you know, there's a lot. Who's the one deciding whether it's green and sustainable?
The consumer. I mean, look at how much we're impacted by advertising. We get blitzed.
I know.
Every few seconds, somebody sells us something.
Right.
Well, they sold us on computers. If you think about that for just a second, they said, remember when computers first came out, they said, oh, my gosh, we're going to cut the consumption of paper down by 90-some-odd percent.
Yeah, right.
Who was dreaming on that one?
And we'll save you a lot of time. You'll have more leisure time.
No, yeah, right. Well, you know, you're sitting there tapping your fingers waiting for the microwave to go, you know. I mean, my gosh.
Well, you look at advertising now. It says, you know, this car really gets good gas mileage. It's 32 miles a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a car that ever got less than 32 miles a gallon. I've been driving for 50 years. My new Volkswagen, have you seen it? It's electric.
Oh, did you get it converted?
It's a 1963 Volkswagen. It cost me about a penny a mile to drive. I'm still burning coal yet because I got to plug it in. And if I had photovoltaic panels on the house, it'd be free. But, I mean, I see this stuff. This is a hybrid. That's a joke.
Yeah, but the really sad part about it is when we were having all this energy, so-called energy problems back in the 70s, all of a sudden, they've dropped the price of gas, and there we go. And
where did that happen? It went from Carter to Reagan, because Carter did the Solar Energy Institute up in Boulder, who I worked with in Golden. And those panels all came down when Reagan came in, and it was drill, baby, drill. We cannot drill our way out of this. It won't work. We've only got 2% of the world's petroleum in the United States.
Well, then what are they doing over on the Western Slope?
Well, those guys are running the last of the resource down. After they get through that, they'll have alternatives. You've got coal, and you've got oil shale.
Well, they say we have between 2 and 3% of the world's reserves of oil. Yet, having said that, we have enough oil in this country to power this country for 80 years.
And where the real source is going to be coal. I mean, that's where the long term is. Probably haven't figured out how we get oil shale out.
But if you think about 3% of the world's reserves in oil, and we can power this country that uses 25% of the world's oil for 80 years, that's a lot of reserves in our holdings. Now, when environmentalists talk about drilling and oil and all of this business, and they complain about, you know, offshore drilling and the catastrophic effects that may have on the environment, I think it's a bunch of baloney, because as long as we're not drilling it here, we don't care if we pollute Saudi Arabia. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We don't mind buying it over there as long as we're not polluting our country. We don't care if we buy it somewhere else, and because they surely don't care if they pollute anything. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? We're pretty eco-friendly in this country compared to so many other countries that are not eco-friendly.
Yeah, but oil is a global commodity now, and we can't make a dent in it. If we drilled everything we got in the United States, oil isn't going to go down. We're not going to drop. I mean, it's a world commodity. I mean, they've got together, they've locked us in at whatever that price is going to be next month. It'll go back up close to $4. If we were able to develop all our resources here, price is never going to go down. Natural gas isn't going to go down. Neither is petroleum or propane.
Well, the price at the pump I don't think is going to go down that much, okay? And the reason for that is you're either going to pay them for it or you're going to pay our oil companies
sure.
for it. One way or another, you're going to pay somebody for the oil. It just costs them less to produce here because they don't have to ship it. Now, the other thing is the argument against offshore drilling and its environmental impact is a bunch of baloney, too, because when you have these great big tanker trucks or tanker ships coming across the ocean, I mean, how many of those have had spills?
Oh,
a lot of
these, sure. And it's a trade-off across the board.
It is. But if you look at all of the oil rigs and platforms that are in the ocean today, they've been there for decades, and the amount of oil that they have spilled into the ocean has been almost immeasurable. I mean, it's an extremely small amount. My wife used to work for C.F. Braun, which is one of the largest engineering companies in the world, and Santa Fe International Corporation, which is one of the largest oil drilling companies in the world. They're owned by Kuwait, the country of Kuwait.
C.F. Braun is the name of them?
C.F. Braun. Hmm. Okay. And an oil platform is one of the most highly engineered structures in history. They're so efficient, it's unbelievable. They cost a lot, but they're very efficient. They are so much better than using a ship to transport oil from another country through our seas, through the Panama Canal to here. I mean, you're using up a lot of fossil fuel bringing it here
sure.
in the ship itself, and the Exxon Valdez. In Alaska, what a nightmare that was, okay? So the risk is much greater. So I say drill here as a stopgap in order to give us time to develop other forms of energy, wind, solar, you know,
geothermal.
Geothermal okay. especially, oh yeah.
Now let's talk about drilling here. What is your take on them opening up drilling in the wildlife refuge at Baca?
I don't think that's going to be a major issue. And they can do a number of different techniques. They can slant drill it. It depends how much they want to punch out of it.
But what is the purpose of having a wildlife refuge? I lose something there when you – and I think some of the public loses that. If you have an area that is supposed to be not disturbed for
well,
the wildlife.
It depends on how much we need the natural resource. I mean, if it's a real – I mean, like a wilderness area, they're not – perpetually out of reach. If we need those resources, we'll go get them. We did exploration in all the national parks in the 40s for critical minerals. And if we need to get the oil and gas, the gas primarily out of Baca, we'll go drill it.
Well, it's like Anwar. You know, you have so many, you know, people talking about drilling in Alaska, in Anwar. Why not?
Well, I'm...
I mean, you're talking 200 acres.
Yeah, but I think if we have offshore, we'll still have the tankers. We're not going to replace those.
No, right. If you're drilling it here, you won't have to buy as much foreign oil, so you won't have as many tankers coming into this country. Hopefully,
I don't think it's a mix. I think we'll do both.
So if you're drilling for gas or oil and you're going through a water aquifer, how do they keep from?
I don't know, and that's outside my county commissioner realm.
Well,
their geologists that definitely deal with those.
Right, but I mean, that's definitely what can possibly be going on into the next county, I guess. Is what.
Oh, if you go south or you go west or you go north, I mean, yeah, we're surrounded by energy development.
Right.
We're one of the few counties that, for whatever reason, they haven't found the resources yet.
I find that, how did we get left out of that one?
I don't know, but...
But we have hit peak oil. I mean, the production's going down, and we know within 50 to 150 years we're going to be using alternatives because we're out.
Right.
But if you're an oil company and you're on the basically that's where you're getting your salary, you're paying the stockholders, you're going to do everything you can for the short term because you're dealing on a quarter basis. You're not dealing on 5, 10, 15 years out. You have to show product every quarter to make sure you get that bonus.
Well, you know, there's a huge argument going on out there as to whether we've hit peak oil, because from what some of them that are out there speaking, they're saying that it's a renewable resource and that they're actually finding when they've left some of these wells, they've gone back and found them recharged.
Well, you can do some
and that they have found some really deep in the earth oceans of oil. And actually, there's actually an ocean that they found in an Arctic area inside the earth that's there.
Again, we could talk about peak oil, and we'd have to bring other resources in on that one. But again, that's not a county issue yet.
No, it isn't. It isn't. But
no, we're trying to solve all the world's problems right here, which is not going to happen.
I only brought that up because you said it was peak oil.
Oh, goodness.
That was the segue. But no, as far as county issues go, I mean, it's not like we don't have any problems. Where do you think that you can make a difference on areas that are problems that you foresee coming up?
Well, the challenge is going to be road and bridge because costs are going up and dollars are going down. Livable salaries, that's going to be an ongoing challenge that whoever's here into the future will be dealing with.
And so how can you make that difference?
Myself?
Well, as commissioner.
Well, we're looking at alternatives for businesses all the time. We've brought a lot of resources in that have enhanced the quality of life, and as a result, a lot of folks with the dollars that you build for have moved in here because it's an extremely attractive place to live. The scenery's out of sight. It's fairly safe. We don't have much crime. The weather is, we are the banana belt.
But we do have a drug problem in this county.
I think everybody has a drug problem. Yeah.
Yeah, but we have a pretty substantial drug problem in this county.
I deal with friends. I mean, Family Youth Initiative. I deal with the police. I don't know that it's any worse than any place else. I think it's a standard. I mean, I just don't think it's that. I don't think it's epidemic. I think it's an issue, but we have it across the world.
Well, this is true, but I mean, it seems to me that. Is enough being done in that area?
I think it is. I mean, yeah. I don't see it spilling out. I talk to the district attorney on a weekly basis. I talk to the sheriff and the police force on a daily basis. They're on it. They're working on it. But I don't see it. I don't see people selling drugs on the street corners.
No, you don't.
We haven't had too many deaths drug-related. We've had probably one or two in the last couple of months. But it's not to the point where you get into the big cities where it's a percentage. It's just not that high here.
Well, I have a couple of issues I want to ask you about. One of them pertains to the jail and the death that was in the jail of Bob Eggert.
Yes.
What do you know about that? I mean, I've heard a lot of stories. A lot of people talk to me about this stuff because of my background. And I've looked into some of these issues with Bob's death and whatnot. I've read the coroner's report. I've read the police reports and the sheriff's reports. On that, I've read the newspaper articles and other things about this death. And I'll tell you what, when I add two and two and it comes up three, I'm having a problem. I've read these things and I've gone through these things and I have tried to be so objective in this thing.
Sure.
And so on the side of law enforcement, every which way I possibly can get there from here. I can't get there from here.
Okay.
I'm trying real hard to get there from here. I mean, I read that this is a state-of-the-art facility from their website designed with the safety and security of both prisoners and staff in mind. I've talked to several people that either work or have worked in that jail and say that it has been, unless it's changed in the very, very last recent past, horrifically understaffed. We read an article that says that when the last article that came out a week or two ago about this investigation coming through.
The Independent,
which is from Arapahoe County.
Right.
The report has not been made available to the public.
It hasn't been available to us either.
Yeah, which I would really like to have a copy and read it. But the other thing is that there is no state law that prevents the sheriff from talking about, which he said there was in the paper, about a death in the jail. There is no law in this state that prevents him from talking about it. Freedom of Information Act says that he can talk about it. Now, when the death occurred, a number of people, and I was one of them, that said, gee, Why aren't we hearing about this? Pete Palmer from BV wrote a letter to the editor and said, gee, there was a death in the jail. What happened?
Sure.
How come that's a newsworthy event? And Walker said that there was a policy that says we don't talk about suicides or deaths in the jail. Well, why not? And why does he say, due to public outcry, he felt that it would be prudent to have an independent exterior investigation? Why do the people have to cry out for something like that? That should be a natural course of procedure, like it is in almost every other jail in the country. Okay, and the reason I bring this up is because you're at the top of the food chain.
Well, again, as I mentioned, we don't manage the sheriff; we just do the budget.
You do the budget, but but there has to be a check and balance. You can't have any department, anybody, even yourself, that can just do whatever they want, the way they want, no matter what. There has to be somebody that says, hey, wait a minute, this is not right. I would like to see more transparency in some of these things. Like I said earlier, I alluded to the fact that the jail is one of the largest liabilities in this county. If somebody dies in that jail, when you're in the care and custody of the sheriff, he's responsible.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, the first death in this jail was 4 or 5 years ago, early on in the jail. The jail was understaffed when that gentleman committed suicide. It was understaffed.
Okay.
When this guy committed suicide, allegedly, the jail was understaffed. Now, it said in the paper that Salida did not communicate with the sheriff's department about going out and trolling for violators under the probation department.
The Salida Police Department?
Salida PD.
Okay.
And their probation went out on FEBARC weekend on a Friday night, and we're kind of looking for violators that were drinking. Now, I have heard that they do that routinely. This is not something they just did on a lark. They do this a lot, especially on big weekends, 4th of July, you know, FEBARC, that type of thing. The influx, even if they didn't do that, it's a big, big weekend for this county. It's got to be one of the biggest weekends of all.
Sure. And it's a party weekend.
It is. And you know you're going to have arrests. You know you're going to have a larger influx of inmates. You know you're going to have it. Why is the jail not upstaffed in case you're going to have that? Because the history has been from the people I've talked to that this is a routine thing. I mean, this is a big arrest weekend.
Who are you talking to? I mean,
lots of people that live in this community. Lots of people.
Law enforcement?
No.
Okay.
I'm talking about just citizens.
Okay.
They know when they read the paper, they go, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense because they do this all the time. Why would they have to tell the sheriff's department whenever they do this all the time? And FEBARC weekend is a big weekend for them to do. This is what they normally do.
Okay.
You see? Now, like, I don't live in this county, and I have a law enforcement background, and some things just don't add up. As an example, it says in the paper that they handed this prisoner off, which was Eggert, and they didn't know that he had been drinking. The officer that took custody of him and then took him to the jail didn't know that he'd been drinking, and he blew a 284.
Yeah.
That's pretty drunk.
Sure.
How could you not know that?
I can't tell you.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
What I'm saying is that people come
to... You don't
to
think the press really scrutinizes this down?
No. The press doesn't do anything here. The paper doesn't scrutinize anything.
Well, I got to disagree with that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know we're getting to the end of the hour here. We've only got a couple of minutes, but there is really no investigative reporting done by this paper. I mean, if they're given a press release, they'll print it. That's it. And I'm not saying and I'm not trying to make an argument here.
No, I understand.
I'm just saying this is what people are telling me all the time.
Sure.
And when I read discrepancies in the paper. And what is said by the sheriff, and then I find out later that they're untrue. As an example, they said that the guard found Eggert, that the guards found Eggert.
Right.
I knew within 5 days after his death that it was a bail bondswoman, and I had her name and telephone number who found her 5 days after, and it didn't come out until I got a copy of the police report that said that that's exactly who found her.
Okay.
Have you read those police reports?
Yeah.
You have.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how come it is in one report, two witnesses at the exact same time said that Eggert's face was blue, and the other witness says he was pale?
I can't tell you. Number one, we're still under investigation. Political answer.
Apparently, the investigation has been concluded by Arapahoe County.
And it hasn't been released.
It hasn't been released, but it has been concluded.
Yeah.
Okay. But what I'm saying is that I'm just talking about the perception of the people. I'm not saying Walker did anything wrong. I'm not saying anything was done wrong in the jail. What I'm saying to you as a county commissioner is it's the perception that the people of this county have of that law enforcement agency. And it's not a good one. And I'm not making it up, and I don't like saying it. I got to tell you, it really bothers me.
And I just don't hear that. I mean, I really don't hear that. Because I've known other situations in the county prior to Walker that were questionable. And again, we see most of that stuff from the county standpoint because we're at that next level and we're in the same offices.
Right.
We're just not seeing a lot of discrepancy in the sheriff department.
Well, I'll tell you, anything that's in print, there's discrepancies in everything that's been in print so far.
From the papers or?
From the paper and the releases to the reports that are their own reports and the press releases, they vary in the facts. They do. And
do you think that's the paper or just miscommunication?
I think it's a number of things. But I'm saying that the perception is to the average common sense person that lives in this county, reads things, and I hear them at restaurants talking. I hear them all over talking. And a lot of them want to talk to me and people that I know because of my background.
Sure.
And I'm not the only one. There are other former police officers in the community and in this county that have been doing this anywhere from up to 30 years. Experience in full-time law enforcement that are going, what the hell is going on with the Sheriff's Department in Chaffee County? And it's not just me. I'm talking about people that I have run into that have had vast experience in law enforcement are going, what is going on?
We just don't hear that. I mean, the commissioners, we hear almost everything from everybody because we're basically ground source to either rumors or misinformation or new facts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you that if you're reelected, and I wish you luck, if you're reelected, that there will come a time in the not too distant future where there will be a group of these people that will probably come out and start talking about the discrepancies of what is.
Well, we'd like to see that earlier than later.
Well, and you will.
I mean,
because
something happens in Roden Bridge, we hear it the next day.
Right.
Social services, we hear it the next day. Or food not getting to where it should go. Yeah, I mean, I'm there 24/7. I'm the only full-time commissioner we've ever had.
Right.
I'm usually there at 8 o'clock, and I'm still here.
That's right.
That's the bad part about running for
Jerry,
office.
We're out of time. We're actually over time here, about a minute and 20 seconds. I wanted to thank you for coming in, and I appreciate you taking the heat there a little bit at the end. And sharing with us your views and experiences and your extensive understanding of some of the forest issues and whatnot and water rights. Appreciate that very much. And I want to thank the listeners for being out there. And again, you are listening to KHENLP Salida 106.9. This is Jay DeMay and the People's Voice. And Melody Hallett, we thank you and good night.
I got to tell you,